Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Fulton Lewis, Jr., speaking from the studios of radio station WOL in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Well, Mr. Andrew Jackson Higgins, the human cyclone from New Orleans, about whom I told you night before last, the gentleman who had the largest ship construction contract in world history, a contract to build 10,000-ton cargo ships on a quantity production line, finally lost his fight to hold that contract today. The contract was suddenly canceled on Saturday, you remember, and Mr. Higgins immediately came to Washington, arriving yesterday afternoon. Since his arrival yesterday afternoon, he has, this human cyclone, held extended conferences with Admiral Emory S. Land, the chairman of the Maritime Commission, with the Maritime Commission itself, which was called into special session to hear him, and with technicians, with Vice President Wallace, and with the President's Secretary Marvin McIntyre, and with Navy officials. And in his spare time, he has held two lengthy press conferences, and he got a good night's sleep. But it was all to no avail. The Maritime Commission announced officially late this afternoon that the cancellation order cannot be rescinded. The steel that would be needed for these new shipyards, which Mr. Andrew Jackson Higgins was going to build, is needed more immediately and more urgently for actual war materials, and the cancellation order must stand. Tonight, the amazing Mr. Higgins is on his way to the Pacific Coast to confer with Mr. Henry J. Kaiser, equally amazing, the other quantity production shipbuilder, to confer with Mr. Kaiser on a joint program to convert the present shipbuilding program of the nation to airplane building instead. Those huge cargo planes, which would be out of reach of German submarines and could carry men and equipment far more rapidly than surface ships could ever dream of doing. Mr. Kaiser is coming here to Washington next week, but that wasn't soon enough for Mr. Andrew Jackson Higgins. Therefore, Mr. Higgins' sudden trip to California, all of which is just as well because, as it is now, when the two men arrive here in Washington next week, they'll have their plans just that much better in hand. Amazing people, both of them. And don't be misled into thinking that they are in any sense cranks or irresponsibles. They're quite the opposite. Very frankly, they're being awaited with a very friendly, very favorable attitude on the part of government officials here. You'd be amazed at how many high figures in positions of control are strongly behind them in this conversion proposal, if they can only show that it can be practically done. The chief question seems to be where the engines and the aluminum will come from to make this fleet of 5,000 cargo planes that they're talking about. As for the engines, I frankly don't know that answer. But for the aluminum, there are two possibilities. First, the metal magnesium, which is even lighter than aluminum and which Mr. Kaiser himself has been getting into production on the Pacific Coast. The other possibility is a very interesting development on which I stumbled this afternoon. I learned that the Budd Manufacturing Company in Philadelphia, the people who specialize in stainless steel and who have made the stainless steel railroad trains, streamliners and such things, I learned that the Budd Company now has under construction a plant for the production of two-motored cargo airplanes to be built of stainless steel instead of aluminum. These new planes will have a big door under the belly that's hinged, and it opens down to form a ramp up which the tanks and motorized units can go into the cargo space of the plane. The planes are of conventional design. They have a tricycle landing gear, not particularly fast in speed, but that's not necessary. Carrying capacity is the all-important thing, and that they have. There's one tremendously important point about these stainless steel planes, and that is they do not have to be constructed by the riveting method, which is used on aluminum planes. That riveting, as I think I may have told you before, is the great time thief in present airplane construction. Every individual rivet has to be, the hole has to be drilled by hand. Each individual rivet has to be put in by hand and riveted by hand. And when you consider that a flying fortress has more than 300,000 rivets in it, you can get some idea of the time requirement. On these stainless steel planes, you can use so-called spot welding instead, which is done in split seconds. It's much stronger than riveting. It means that the metal sheeting can be much thinner than aluminum would have to be, so the final weight of the steel plane is not so much more than the weight of the aluminum plane, and the saving in labor time would amount to tens of thousands of hours. And that may be the stunt that Mr. Kaiser and Mr. Higgins have in mind. Incidentally, the steel that Budd is using for making these planes is an ordinary grade of steel. It would not put any additional load on the already tight supply of nickel for alloy purposes. You understand, of course, that the program is to stop building surface vessels and build these airplanes instead of those surface vessels. And if these planes are to be built of stainless steel construction, the steel would be available from the ships that will not be built. Incidentally, there are strong indications here that this cancellation of the Higgins shipbuilding contract is to save steel, that was the excuse given, is tied indirectly with the opening of a second front on the European continent in the very early future. The idea is that we need every possible ounce of steel now to produce materials now for immediate development. The general opinion here is that the second front may not be open for several weeks more, perhaps not for a month or 6 weeks more. After all, Russia has not cracked, although it is recognized and admitted that the Russian armies are very hard-pressed. The longer we can wait, however, and the more material we can pile up, the better chance we have of being successful with the second front attack. The Russians are making increased appeals for us to hurry. The Russian ambassador here, Maxim Litvinov, conferred with the president today, and the presumption is that he urged the president to make this counterattack on Germany's back door at the very earliest possible moment. It may be that he gave the president some information about Russia's ability to continue resistance that may hurry up the attack across the channel. Now about Congress. The Senate passed this afternoon the synthetic rubber bill, the one to set up a separate government agency to handle the rubber from alcohol program, which has been not very well or friendlily handled thus far. And you may be gratified to know that that bill was passed by such an overwhelming majority that there was not even a record roll call. There was no necessity for any record roll call because when the yeas and nays were called for by voice, there was not even one single dissenting vote, not even from Senator Barkley, the Democratic leader himself, and he had been leading the opposition. In the meantime, the Agriculture Committee of the House of Representatives approved this synthetic rubber bill by unanimous vote. It was sent immediately to the Rules Committee of the House, through which all important legislation has to be sifted before it reaches the House floor, and it was approved by the Rules Committee by unanimous vote. Late this afternoon, Speaker Rayburn and Representative John McCormick of Massachusetts, the Democratic leader of the House, held a conference. They decided to bring this synthetic rubber bill up on the floor of the House tomorrow afternoon for debate and action. Seems to be a foregone conclusion that this bill will be passed tomorrow afternoon. Very candidly, there is no mystery about the reason for that. You, ladies and gentlemen, are the reason. The thousands and thousands of letters that you have poured into Washington demanding action on this rubber situation, you have taken control of your government in this case. You are demonstrating that this Congress, which you have heard ridiculed and slapped, is your medium of self-government, that you are, in fact, demonstrating that democracy does function. It might interest you to know that it is within the last 10 days that members of Congress began to be convinced that the pressure from you was so heavy and so determined that they would have to do something about this synthetic rubber situation before they went home. And this legislation is the result. The president, of course, has to sign the bill before it can become a law. There's a very strong probability that if he decides to veto it, it can be passed over his veto. That's not certain, but it does seem strongly probable. If by any chance he should veto it, however, it's a very safe bet that he will do his own shaking up of the rubber administration in the government as a compromise solution, which may be just as well. That might be an even better solution than this legislation as it now stands, because no one claims that this plan of setting up a separate agency to handle the alcohol rubber program, apart from the petroleum rubber program, is any cure-all or any perfect solution. But this is action one way or the other, and if the president, in his wisdom, thinks that a reorganization is better, this legislation lays the matter squarely in his lap. President Roosevelt met at the White House today with his congressional leaders, and they spent nearly 2 hours talking about the problem of preventing any further increases in the cost of living. Some of the congressional conferees who took part in the discussion said that the whole subject was gone over very thoroughly, and that included wages and all other production costs. You remember that the president already has announced that he is going to send a message to Congress very shortly on this so-called anti-inflation program. There has been a great deal of speculation as to just what the message will say, And there have been suggestions that it might ask Congress for new laws to strengthen the president's hand in this fight of his against rising prices. We didn't get very much information on that score from those congressmen who talked to the president today. They were strangely uncommunicative. But some did say that they doubt whether there will be any request for immediate legislation at the present time. Some of them felt that the president may go along with this program for the time being with the powers he already has to save any new laws to be passed at leisure later on. In the meantime, however, I was informed by very reliable sources tonight that Mr. Leon Henderson has actually drafted a bill, a very brief bill, which he is going to try to get across in Congress if he can get the president's approval. A bill giving his Office of Price Administration the power to put a ceiling over all wages and at the same time providing that the ceiling on farm prices shall not be more than 100% of the parity scale of prices on farm commodities. That, of course, is a compromise to try to appease or try to block arguments of both sides in this labor block, farm block controversy on the price control issue. The farmer says he demands an increase in farm prices because labor wages are uncontrolled, and that means that the price of everything he has to buy is going up. Labor says that it demands an increase in labor wages because the farmer is allowed to increase his prices, and that means an increase in the cost of living, and that might go on forever. This puts control over both at the same time, and it seems to answer the arguments of both. We'll see how it turns out. There still is no further report on that United Nations convoy to Murmansk, which the Germans claimed several weeks ago to have all but wiped out. You remember the high command claimed to have sunk 32 out of 38 ships in that convoy. But because the convoy was British and the British have made no announcement, there has been nothing put out from here. When the news is made public, I'm willing to predict, however, that the real loss of the United Nations ships in that engagement will be less than half the number claimed by the Germans. Considerably less than half. That's the top of the news as it looks from here, ladies and gentlemen. Until tomorrow evening, good night.
Analyzes the news from the nation's capital each weekday evening at this same time from WOL. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.